Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin. With guest co-host...
Gaelic Warrior.
I'm on the way home, so it's a bit noisy.
By all means, when you get back home, hang up and then log in from your PC, where we've spoken before, connection is much, much, much better from there. And also, when you are trying to speak, can you tell other people around you, like, to shut the hell up? You're trying to do a podcast.
Great, thanks.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 171. As usual, I am your host, Mad Jin, and I'm joined by the regular panel, the Mian Team.
Troll faces are the best faces indeed.
Makalua?
I get to go pew 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 with XCOM units, yay!
I guess Dan's back.
I'll be back!
And we're joined by Gaelic Warrior.
Hey guys.
TK did a live stream over on their Twitch channel. They had Dennis Shirk, the senior producer at Firaxis for Civ, along with one of their 2K people.
Yeah, it's Kate Dissler, the community and social media manager for 2K Games that started in January. That's right, they added social media to their title now.
It was painful to watch, sort of.
Oh, would you be referring to the quote-unquote little bit of lag that Kate addressed on the stream?
We have a little bit of lag. 3 minutes later.
I feel the need to quote from Kate about that stream.
We do know that there is a little bit of a lag. It's just, we are actually very, very far away from Dennis. So everything I'm saying has to go up to space and come on back. We must be patient. We're doing this on a turn basis. Everyone has to complete their turn before Dennis can answer the question. So just keep sitting tight.
Yeah.
So their streaming code is as bad as what we everybody likes to talk about their network code?
Yeah, probably.
Snap.
Realism really does trump gameplay.
I don't know how they managed to have that much of a delay. But anyways, on to actual information. The truest statement ever, Kate was actually complaining that she has a hard time handling her happiness levels. And she asked Dennis what he thought of that and if he can give her some tips.
Sometimes I'm playing and I think I'm doing okay and I'm feeling pretty happy and all of a sudden my little guy is like, no, you're terribly unhappy. No golden age for you. What are your best strategies for keeping everyone happy?
Well, you're doing it wrong. Obviously.
Thanks.
Gods and Kings, one of the things that actually players have been giving us feedback on is that there is a little too much happiness in the system. So I don't know what you're doing wrong. I apologize.
All of the things.
Dennis actually confirmed and reconfirmed quite a bit of information. For the multiplayer side, he confirmed that there is a multiplayer team, unlike, you know, before this point, and that they are working on a variety of things, including an observer mode, where somebody can just observe. There is a sequential turn mode.
I like that one fun time we actually turned on non-simultaneous turns.
And Beyond the Sword, yes. But there's some people that actually want this, so hey, to each their own, I guess.
Well, it makes sense for like a pit boss game or a Diplo game or something.
Played by email.
Yeah. Speaking of which, there is pit boss games coming. It is on the list of things that they said they are actually working on this time.
We've got a hybrid mode that actually lets you all play at the same time, but when combat occurs, stuff like that, it actually switches to a turn mode and then goes back to regular at the same time mode after it's done. And obviously the long, long awaited pit boss.
Oh my gosh, in Pit Boss, double moving was a really big problem in Civ 4, so I'm glad to see that.
So, at the very least, they are working on Pit Boss, and there will be a variety of options. But I kind of take Pit Boss to be more like sequential turn anyways, or more like play by email, because you can just walk away, and then eventually come back for your turn.
Yeah. Well, when you have like 24 or 36 or 48 hour turn timers, you can kind of walk away from simultaneous turns as well.
Yeah.
In the chat, Kai says observer mode for multiplayer because multiplayer doesn't lag enough just yet.
Hey, they did say they were polishing and bug fixing. I'm not sure if polishing should have been the first word they used. If you polish a turd, it doesn't really change. You have to plug fix it and build it and then polish it.
Compress it into a diamond.
I'm pretty sure that's going to go in the signatures of some Civ users, which you just said there, Imagine. I can see it right now. It's all going to be all over the Civ forums with, like, within a week.
If you polish a turd, .. There's going to be a blank line after that, and people are going to fill in what they want after that. And still put Mitch in.
Yeah. Well, the observer mode, I can see that being beneficial in certain cases where, of course, someone just wants to be able to record what is going on and not actually participate, or someone gets knocked out and they want to be able to go back in perhaps and see what's going on. Like, I mean, it could also be really fun for like color commentaries, which I kind of pseudo did once on a Beyond the Monument episode. Oh, cross promotion. Look at that.
Or leagues is more where I'm thinking it might be. If you're having league matches where, like, if they're actually having a proper ladder setup or something or some sort of tournament or whatever, then they might want to have somebody observing to make sure that shenanigans don't ensue.
Or at least ensure that shenanigans are, you know, recorded for posterity.
That too. Yeah, because I could see that in a league setting, if somebody complains about another player cheating, then an easy way for them to do anything would just be observe that player's games for a little while. And if nothing's shenaniganing, you don't knock them out of the league. But right now they don't really have that option of actually gathering data before they can make a decision about cheating or not.
And now in Beyond the Monument, whenever people ask you questions about, help me fix my game, you can say, well, load it up. Let me see you play.
I don't know if it works with single player. That would be a little off, but that could work too.
Oh.
But the thing is, you could start a multiplayer game and then just have like you in it.
Yeah.
It's also important to note that Dennis also confirmed that this is not just going to be for Brave New World, that if you have Vanilla or just Gods and Kings, then you will also have the new multiplayer capabilities. Yes. You do not have to get Brave New World in order to benefit from this in particular.
Backported to the previous games where they were originally promised. So don't worry, you'll be able to test it out just fine. The only backside problem that I have with observer mode is, say, the person doing the observing is giving that information out to somebody else who's playing. That's the only downside I can see to it. Confirm that there will be no weather-related items in Brave New World.
Will you be bringing back the effects of global warming?
Not in Brave New World. One of those things that we wanted to avoid with Civ 5, at least. We didn't necessarily want to introduce completely random world elements like that that kind of takes a player out of the strategy that they're really going for. Now, if we decide that there's a better way to do that in the future, a better way to do it in a future title, that's definitely something that we'll always revisit. I know it's been done well in some past versions, but it just didn't quite fit with what we were doing with 5.
No surprise there.
Linked to some weather thing or something?
Yeah, basically, they'd have to institute weather patterns, and then climate change would need some sort of mechanic to
instead of just
burn out stuff.
Decided you produce too much pollution. Here, have some free desert.
It could be cool as an effect in the game. You know, suddenly it starts raining or something. But if it actually affected your tiles, yes, I guess that becomes an issue, doesn't it?
Other things, Dennis confirmed that Firaxis and or 2K, bidding more Firaxis, pays attention to the forums. That they actually read things on the forums. Obviously, they don't always read and implement things that people complain about, but they at least read it. And so if people are posting on forums, the dev will see it, even if they don't necessarily post and talk to you about it. Things have changed because of forum input. I remember when Vanilla came out, we had people with various lists of things, and they were written all in the forums, and you can track back, you can go from the patch note directly back to the threads where they came from about changes and balance and stuff like that. So they've been doing that right from the beginning. And he even mentions it in the interview that there will be a patch in the fall after Brave New World comes out.
We know as soon as the fans get hold of the game, they're going to find the best way to play it, and then they're going to find the optimal path through the game, and of course we're going to have to destroy that and make it difficult again.
Yeah, we find those in multiplayer pretty quickly, because that's generally how it works. I think the real issues I have, some of the Civs themselves.
I guess that's the caveat I was going to throw in there. While they do look at the forums, some people's opinion of what a balance is not necessarily the same. I'll throw that out there.
Spain. All I'll say is Spain. Please fix Spain.
In the second half of the interview, there was a question about, will there be any changes to civilizations already in the game? And the answer was yes. That doesn't necessarily apply to Spain specifically, because people have been questioning Spain about their ability being, you know, overpowered, at least relative to other powers. And is there something we could do with that? The only civ that was mentioned specifically was France.
What?
Some of the original civs, an example of that is Napoleon, France. Need their traits and their items updated for the new game. And Napoleon's is, for example, a city of light, and his theming bonuses are actually doubled in their capital. So we try to go back and revisit all the existing civs whenever we add these big new mechanics to the game to make sure that they fit in.
Beyond that they were going to introduce the chateau, a unique improvement that
improves your wine tiles. By any chance, does it?
I don't think we quite know what the chateau does yet.
No, we don't.
France in vanilla Civ 5 were very strong, and one of the strongest, I would have said, that they would have been many top players' choice. But in Gods and Kings, you know, are more balanced. They're not as strong, and they're still a very good Civ. They're one of the better ones, but they wouldn't feel overpowered. Whereas if you're on a land map and you have the Huns, no one can stop you, because the unit is so cheap, you don't require a horse. It's ridiculous. Spain, of course, you make a few scouts, you find the wonders, you get free settlers. You've got three cities up. I've had religion at turn 23 with Spain. And then the other one is Maya, of course, in a longer game, Maya Unstoppable with the pyramid building. They've got some new civs coming in, which looked like they also could be ridiculous.
Well, the problem is, I think the civs you mentioned aren't really out of balance when you compare them versus other civs that are also fairly strong. There's balance in the games based around other things that aren't directly five of this is equal to one of that.
Another factor with regards to a particular civilization and being able to really take advantage of era-specific units, if you're stuck on an island.
Yeah, have fun with that.
Right? That can be, hey, guess what? I'm playing on a Pangaea map and I am Polynesia. Oh, well, fan-freaking-tastic with regards to my unique ability. So those kind of things come into play as well. I think we'll have to wait and see at this point. And if there are still these pressing issues in the community, like concerns with regards to Spain and the Huns that are still kind of out there, then there also still is the fall patch consideration that 2K and Firaxis might be looking a little bit more at some of the kind of the quote-unquote bigger issues and the overall issues with the new mechanics and then the existing mechanics. And then I think some of this more minutia, not to say that it's not important, but we as Civilization players can get really, really deep right into our considerations as well as the breadth of issues.
Yeah.
Other information from the video. Will corporations and airports be included in the game?
Corporations, no. Airports, yes. We are bringing back the airlift. So what's nice about the airlift, especially with one unit per tile, is when you do an airlift and then you send a unit across, it doesn't just pile up in the city. It actually fills up all the hexes around the city. So as long as your unit has movement when it moves into the airport, he can go.
Probably not going to be able to stand in the water, as an example, but just to give kind of us an idea of what that would look like, because, of course, when we're thinking about airlifts, you know, like in Civilization 4, for example, hey, I want to airlift this unit from this city to this other city, and let's go to city number 2 to send it to city number 1, and city 3, and 4, and 5, and 6. Hey, look at that. I've just airlifted like 3 or 4 units this particular turn.
3 or 4 stacks of units.
Any new religions or belief systems? Kind of bulged my eyes out at this one.
We've split up Christianity first off. That was an easy one because it seemed like most of the civs in the game always went for Christianity because that was their flavor, a lot of European civs. So we've actually split that up into Catholicism and Protestantism and Eastern Orthodoxy, I think. We've also got a whole new section called Reformation Beliefs. So we redid the piety branch a bit. And if you unlock all the piety trees, you actually get to pick a Reformation belief. And these are really powerful beliefs specific to those that finish the piety tree. And you get to pick one. And there can be tourism boosters. There are ones that you can actually purchase science buildings with faith. There's a lot of good options there for religious players, especially when it is tying into the culture game.
We had talked before about piety has this kind of identity crisis right now. Is it culture? Is it religion? It's kind of like it's trying to be a little bit of both and making neither particularly happy.
Mm-hmm. There's no difference with religions right now, whether you choose Islam or you use Christianity. It's just an icon.
Yeah, no.
You choose your own belief system, so I don't understand really why they needed to bother doing that.
But you know what? It's just a couple icons that some people would like.
Someone asked, will there be any other scenarios other than those already mentioned? And it was confirmed, no, it's only 2.
We have devoted a large amount of the cycles of our gameplay team to the new gameplay systems. We've got a lot more gameplay systems in than we have on Gods and Kings. And while you always want to include more scenarios, we thought that we'd get a lot more people interested in the game and a lot more people playing by concentrating on the core systems. We really wanted to start focusing on some of the fine-tune too. In other words, making diplomacy a little less schizophrenic, even better off than we had it in Gods and Kings. So if you take over one civ or one city, you're not suddenly a warmonger. Or maybe that you've got a stellar ally in another civilization. They don't just decide to stab you in the back because they see an opportunity.
Yay! On top of that, there's things called diplomats now, in that same vein of diplomacy. Your spies can be converted over to diplomats.
Yeah, I don't see the value of that straight away from what they're talking about. Because they're saying, well, the diplomats can't get caught as a spy, but they can still feed you this information. But I guess they can't steal technology, so I don't... You can explain it a bit better.
In addition to what you've said, yes, you have a spy in there, and then at some point you have the ability to then say, okay, I want to make this person a diplomat. So like you said, it doesn't steal technology, instead sends intrigue and reports, for instance, on how a civilization intends to vote on World Congress resolutions. And if you have a diplomat in a civilization city come vote time, you can use the diplomat as a contact to facilitate vote trading or even vote buying.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah, it's also tied into the abilities with regards to the World Congress, because in the World Congress, the person who hosts the World Congress, which initially the person who hosts the World Congress is the
first person to meet everybody.
Don't you have to have printing press too as well?
Yeah. But from the pictures we've seen, it looks like it goes up by era, so that there's different amounts of votes for things as eras go up.
It's a shame they didn't do something in medieval era, maybe like a round table, Knights of the Round Table, or something that was maybe a slimmed down version of it.
I think the World Congress is supposed to be the slimmed down version of the UN.
Of the UN.
Yes.
Although it looks like they're adding the ability to vote on more things, which is good.
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
Basically means that up until medieval era, it's a game of war until...
Yeah, and that's basically what the world was like.
Fair enough.
They are mimicking life there.
It'll make it more interesting in the long game, won't it? Diplomatic victory is off, for example, and you still want to play a long game. It makes the game less about war and more about other things, which is always good in the longer game. It makes it more interesting, less linear.
The Congress, you'll initially meet every 30 turns, but then as you go along in the game, the frequency increases as the game progresses. Delegates are assigned to each civilization, and the host gets twice as many. The number of delegates increases for each civilization as it reaches a new era, and in later eras, city-state allies also contribute delegates. But votes can be traded for or straight-up bought, and resolutions can be repealed after they are enacted.
Yay.
So there is that kind of, you know, that dynamic. It's like one of the abilities is to ban a luxury. Oh, no, whales have been banned. And, of course, everyone knows from the Civilization 4 days, I'm absolutely in love with whales. I send them love letters all the time. But, well, no, I can then try to push and put that as a resolution the next time. Hey, let's repeal that. And, hey, Alex, I see you have some whales. I bet you want to vote for that too, right? Yes, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. So you get into all of these combinations of things. You know, you can ban city-state trade. There's a standing army tax. There are other benefits that, for instance, allow you to get greater likelihood of writers, artists, and musicians, but at the expense of scientists, engineers, and merchants. Other ones that give you additional culture if you're working natural wonders, or if you have wonders in a particular city that they add even more culture output. So World Congress is one of those new and improved, and I say improved because it's kind of...
It's more than just toss a couple engineers at a late game wonder.
Exactly. Because at some point, the World Congress becomes the United Nations, not as a separate wonder like in Civilization 5 or even Civilization 4 for that matter.
Oh, speaking about Civ 4, Civ 5. Hey, Phil. Here's a few words for you.
We actually removed tech trading from the game because you'd have a lot of players that are constantly just seeing what is going to be most valuable for you in terms of trades.
Yes.
Was confirmed.
But what was also confirmed in the same couple words?
Let's say I'm a freedom civ. I've chosen freedom as my ideology. And somebody else is an order civ. And my tourism is overwhelming them really strong. I'm actually going to start causing their people to be more and more unhappy. So that player has a couple options. He can either ignore it till his population gets so unhappy that his cities start to flip over to my side.
Of course.
So when you live next to the AI that has the capital of 20 wonders in it, don't be surprised if suddenly your cities join their glorious empire?
Well,
I would think it wouldn't work exactly like Civ 4.
I call settling near Dan and building a wonder in the city.
I call rage quit. No.
He can start building more happiness buildings. He can start generating more culture to defend himself. Or he can just invade. But it's just one of those neat little systems at the end of the game that's hopefully going to cause a lot of cool things to happen. We're trying to avoid having that straight line to victory be so straight that nothing occurs in the game that causes things to go sideways.
Big focus in Brave New World is the middle to the later part of the game, rather than being, oh, well, this has been set up from the first part of the game, so now it's a foregone conclusion. Just like, well, I wasn't trying to go for a culture victory before, but so much for my attempt at domination. I guess I'm kind of screwed now because I haven't been building all of this culture up to this point. But hey, there's this tourism thing that now comes into being. Perhaps I can actually shift my strategy and still try to manage a victory in this game rather than having to start anew or go back to like a really, really old save and try again.
Now, wait a minute. Happiness is global, so how are we dictating which cities are getting angry and flipping?
No, they haven't really talked about that.
I see.
Tourism is, don't think, a local thing. From reading the forums and that, it's ideology versus ideology, so city flipping doesn't really kick in till later. So it's not like somebody dumps a city on your border and now you have to worry about your city flipping. It's if your empire sucks.
So you can't just put a city 4x's away from your enemy, drop a great engineer into a wonder, great wall, for example.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then like it's
unexpected.
You're saying it's going to be much longer. You're doing turn 180 plus type stuff.
Yeah, it seems to be more what it is on the what's being said on the forum. Yeah, it's not a city-to-city thing like it was in Civ 4. It's if you choose to ignore the new mechanics, you will hurt yourself, sort of. Some of the other things, like ideological wars in the later eras, or a war I'm using in quotes, ideology versus ideology, population-based stuff, especially with the culture victory now being tourism versus culture. For a long time, vanilla was all rise, no fall, and it looks like they're starting to put in the fall, so that basically you can get screwed if you ignore something.
If that pressure is strong enough, you can actually force one civilization out of their ideology and into yours.
Yeah.
See, this all really worries me coming back to the balance issue with the civs, if they don't address some of those civs.
I go to composite bows and I take your...
Well, there's that.
Yeah, this is balance.
It's map dependent and all of that kind of stuff.
Probably to conclude the Q&A with Dennis, and actually also to tie into the considerations with regards to, oh no, the tourism output is kind of pushing and now my people are becoming unhappy and city flipping and ideology switching. There was a question in the chat about secondary ability for the great musicians and the other new great people, essentially, you know, the splitting of the great artist.
All of the great people in the game have a secondary ability. The great artists still have their create golden age. The great musician has a concert tour ability. And what they're able to do is go tromping into another civilization and perform a concert tour. And that generates a big drop of tourism. So if you're towards the end of the game or you're just impatient, you line a few great musicians up and kind of push yourself over the top in terms of your tourism. The great writer has something called Create Political Treaties, which is basically a internal culture bomb. It just gives you a large bulk of culture when you pop that off.
So as opposed to, you know, with the great general giving yourself the culture bomb with the citadel for against others, this gives you an internal culture bomb that you can then try to use to generate to try to combat that in addition to any of the other measures that he outlined, including but not necessarily warfare. Of course, there is the inevitable question, isn't there anything more new for combat in this expansion? There really isn't a lot about combat in this expansion. That was called Gods and Kings.
Yeah. Thankfully, most of this is about the peaceful side.
Absolutely. Not to say that warmongers can't take advantage of it, but it's not so direct and it's not so focused so much on them. Newest Civilization 5 Brave New World details, and people listening are probably thinking, isn't that what you guys have been talking about like this entire episode?
Absolutely not.
No. The release date for Brave New World has been set. Firaxis announced that during the 2013 PAX East panel, which was talked about extensively on the last episode, 170. Brave New World is to be released in North America on the 9th of July, and the game will spread everywhere else, quote-unquote, from Cinema Blend on the 12th of July. a separate listing on the Well of Souls website maintained by Ariok. You mentioned there, Alex, with regards to new civilizations. Portugal has been confirmed, although I think we mentioned that in the last episode.
What interests me is this Fatoria unique building. That seems really interesting that you can build this, what looks like a castle or fort within a city-state's border, and then you can take copy of their resource. So if they have silk and you don't have silk, you build it in their border, and then you get +4 happiness and you have silk, happy days. I don't know if you get the gold from the tile, but I think it may be just a copy of the resource and the happiness. I think it sounds great, but the problem is if they don't fix the city-state thing, your opponent could come in, make war, pillage that tile, make peace and bugger off and not even have to go to war with you. So that interests me to see how they must have to fix the city-state thing for that to work. For multiplayer, I'm talking about multiplayer, not single player.
Actually, the one thing I have noticed, though, is there's not a lot of stuff in here that, like, for all the different things, that strikes me as this will work only in single player. There's a lot of stuff that would work in multiplayer.
I really like this idea of the Portuguese building. I'm just worried that in multiplayer it'll be useless because of the, unless they fix the city-state mechanic. But
it's map-dependent.
Map-dependent. Yeah, it's a bunch of city-states close to you and you're Portugal, you're lucky. You're going to be much luckier.
So. Yeah, the unique ship for Portugal that now replaces the caravel, you can sell exotic goods for gold and experience, and it's faster than the caravel. And I think it says something about that saying the further away, the more gold you get.
This may only be done once.
Oh, yeah, it
can only be done once. Unit. It's not rinse and repeat. Whew.
Yeah.
Speaking of balance, the Zulu have also been confirmed, so Shaka is at last making his return to civilization.
Mr. Lava Man, Shaka.
We already talked about the World Congress, which when I was quoting from that, I was quoting from what had been consolidated by Ariok on the Well of Souls. Social policies. We have a new policy of aesthetics dedicated to culture. We have exploration, another new policy tree. And we already mentioned that piety is now dedicated to religion. But we also got some more details of the ideological tenets, as we talked about before, that there were three levels and you have to have so many in order to, in one branch, in order to go, you know, a little farther deep into a particular tier branch order. There's young pioneers for +1 local happiness for workshop and factory, double agents, spies, double chance to catch enemy spies, and Iron Curtain, free courthouse in conquered cities. Oh, let me wipe up the drool. Freedom, volunteer army, receive 6 free units, no maintenance, and space procurement measure, buy spaceship parts for gold.
Nice.
That's kind of broken.
Yeah, that's not right, is it?
No. Just not right.
Yeah.
Kamikaze, allow air units to sacrifice themselves to deal massive damage. Gunship diplomacy, +6 influence boost each turn with city-states from which you could demand tribute. Oh, man. I love demanding tribute. Did you know that? Total war, plus 25% production bonus for military units, which gain an additional 15 experience right from the start. We know that there's a new technology called the Internet. Ooh, the Internet. The new technology of the internet is somehow culture-oriented, and I just thought, imagine if that was true in real life. Wait, what am I saying?
I was going to say gunship diplomacy is like the opposite of what of you, because you get a boast when you don't demand tribute.
I know that.
So you have to like stop yourself from doing it.
Finally, to conclude, all of this new information between the Q&A and what's been consolidated through other interviews and articles otherwise, there is an archaeologist unit. So once we get into all these antiquity sites being known, you must take your archaeologist unit and then convert into an archaeological dig, which can yield a great work artifact or be transformed into a landmark improvement. And as Well of Souls is quoted as saying, the civilian unit unsurprisingly looks like Indiana Jones.
That sounds really cool, actually. I like that idea.
I think we slogged this particular topic to death.
We've covered it all now. Yep.
And then some.
Yep.
It's too late. You've covered everything.
Until next time. They'll probably release a whole bunch of new information like a few hours after we finish recording this, just like last time, because, you know, they don't coordinate with us. But anyway, whatever.
I think Firaxis, as well as reading the forums, they should be listening to this show.
Mm-hmm.
We need to send it to them.
Oh, I'm sure they listen to it, and then they promptly ignore whatever it is they tell them.
How about at sales numbers. They can listen to that and realize, this wasn't such a hot idea.
That is something worth listening to.
That was a topic I posted over on Strategy Informers. The title of the article was Fans Didn't Just Want to Buy Civs with DLC, and the Gods and Kings was extremely popular. It's a short article, but the important part is they thought it would be an easier thing just to put out some a la carte civilizations, but everybody's like, no, can you give that to me in a bigger pack or a bigger pack, or maybe, you know, especially a bigger pack that has, like, gameplay with it?
Yep.
Wasn't there gameplay with each one, though? It was a scenario.
Yeah, but not a real...
Not a mechanic, like religion
yes.
or
I understand
trade
that.
Routes. Or...
People always
that.
Look for tweaks to the core gameplay. I'm actually happy with the community that they really pushed for more full-blown expansions that were then successful. That was a good thing for the game in general.
But we've seen this before with Civ 4. There was two major expansions in Warlords and Beyond the Sword. It's not new. Even the timings of how they've done it isn't particularly new either.
No, but there was concern that they wouldn't do it and that they would go to a DLC-only model. That's only really viable if the DLC can add like strong features similar to what we'd see in an expansion, which an expansion's probably a better model for it in terms of development, I think.
I have no issue with them releasing new civs and new scenarios, single-player mods and that kind of thing, because those are fun and there's challenges with the achievements.
Yeah, there's no problem with that.
I have no problem with that as long as they're accurately priced.
Yeah, and that's what some other people have complained about as well, at least on the forum, is that the price, if you bought every single DLC up to the point of Gods and Kings, that it was more expensive and you got less civs and less stuff in comparison to the price of Gods and Kings.
Well, all these things are relative. I mean, I bought everything separately. I bought Gods and Kings separately. I think I must have spent in dollars, best part of $100. And then the gold version comes out, and for like a day, you can buy it for $5 or $10 or something. So, you know, hey, that's how it works. That's life, you know. That's
that's always life. So if you wait to a point where no one's playing a game, you can get it really cheap. It doesn't mean that you're...
And no one's playing the game.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you purchase downloadable content or, say, you purchase an expansion pack on the very first day, it's probably a better example with an expansion pack. I'll probably get less hay mail if I focus on an expansion pack rather than the DLC, because I don't think this argument extends so easily to DLC. To me, you're not just paying the price in order to get that experience period. You're getting that time. So the time in between when the expansion pack comes out and then it's heavily discounted, yes, you've got it for a considerable discount. You didn't pay as much money, but you didn't also have that time in between when the expansion came out and the time that you purchased it in order to play. So you're paying for the time. You're paying for more time in order to play that particular expansion pack or that additional content before somebody else, either completely or until they wait until it becomes heavily discounted. And we know that Steam loves their heavily discounted sales.
So the strategy there, Dan, is to not buy it when it's really expensive and new. Watch Mad Gin videos on YouTube so you become an expert and then buy it in the sale. Boom. Beat everybody with all his training. And it's cheaper.
It's cheaper.
There's a fine balance between that, though.
But you didn't get to play it.
You didn't get to play it.
You can take advantage of gameplay situations that may then be patched in the future, whereas if you wait, then you are not going to get that pre-patch experience, which either might be more exploitative. Some people might like to use that word.
You're doing so well before this, Dan. You were giving a sound economic argument, but
right up
come on,
that
man.
One.
Really?
You missed out on the egg.
It's not just an economic argument, though. See,
you've gotten away from the economic argument here now.
Yeah. That's because my economic argument stands on its own. I don't need to defend it anymore. Now I'm adding more to my argument.
Dan is only further proving the theory that the best face is a troll face. Take advantage of those exploits while they're still around, listeners.
But I put exploit in quotations. Some people might actually like the way it was before it was patched. It might not have been an exploit.
Yeah,
that's all.
Definitely not an exploit that got patched. Nope.
Declare war, make peace.
No, one of the things, and actually I bring back the forums because they had a very similar discussion on the forums related to this, is that they don't mind buying DLC civs and DLC scenario, stuff like that, but they'd prefer if the order of operation was build core game, expansion, then DLC. Hmm. It that people would be willing to buy DLC civs after the game is fully fleshed out with all the different expansions. Because at that point, if the mechanics are solid, then any new DLC is going to be able to take, for DLC civ, is going to take advantage of some part of all of the mechanics rather than a DLC civ like, say, Polynesia or Spain or the Incans or whatever that don't get to take advantage of all of the brand new mechanics that showed up after vanilla.
I think that's a good point, too. And from a longevity of the game standpoint, I don't think that it could hurt it, and it might even help it. Because people are more willing to be patient early on with the expansions in the works, and then once the game's nearing the end of its life cycle, you can keep it going if you have solid DLC.
Yep. I prefer they just patch the game in between releasing the expansions instead of releasing DLC. Patch it so that you fix the issues, you fix the little bugs. Focus on that rather than making money, and you'll make, you know, more money when you release the DLC. I don't know what their business model is, but Civ 5 is an awesome game, but it has issues. And, I think when they released the next version of it, we got bad reviews when it came out, it's vanilla, okay? So that turned a lot of people away from thinking about it, and it wasn't an accessible game for new people into strategy games, certainly turn-based strategy. So when you look at the expansion, how much better is that in terms of attracting new gamers to the game? And do the patches in between vanilla and, say, Gods and Kings and the next one improve it in that way? And I don't think they have. I think the patches they've done haven't been very good, in my opinion. And I'd rather they focused on that and then maybe get more people playing the game.
They put out more patches than they put out DLC before Gods and Kings came out.
Then the question is whether or not they've addressed the proper things in the patches or whether it was kind of one step forward and two step back. That's another consideration. But that continual success of patches in the midst of DLC being released and then Gods and Kings being released and then more patches being released, while certainly Brave New World development was also ongoing as well. It's just a further reflection of that, yes, they are paying attention to what the community is having to say. And it's not just, okay, well, here it is. We're done. Goodbye. It's been 12 months. It's been 18 months since the game has been released. Like it or don't, go to the Monty community. Don't talk to us. There has been that interaction and there has been that response. Certainly there are kind of those, I can't believe they put that in this patch that's been an issue like for the last few months as opposed to something that's been an issue since vanilla. And we could certainly think of particular. That's getting more into the nitty-gritty details, but certainly it hasn't just been, let's just do DLC, let's do expansion packs, let's not focus on fixing what is already out there. And I also remember part of the arguments that some people were saying in the community was, and I'm not saying this is the best way to approach it, but I think they were probably looking at, let's see if people are willing to pay for downloadable content. And if there's a strong enough interest in that downloadable content, which are just kind of little things, so we can be working on patching and we can be working on this new downloadable content, then if there is that money and there's that continued interest in terms of the response we're getting for the patches, people purchasing the downloadable content, then that can then fuel kind of an upfront cost for a particular expansion pack, and then see, okay, now that that expansion pack is out there and the downloadable content has already been out there, how have sales of the expansion pack compared with downloadable content, you know, in the short term as well as the long term, and then make a decision on what they're going to do after that.
The DLC model would have worked if they'd got an 8 or 9 out of 10 game from the start instead of a 6 out of 10 game.
Well, there were some people that rated it 8 or 9 out of 10, actually, at the outset.
Yeah, let's not go there. But
you know what I mean? Like, if they got a game that was more broadly appealing to the
I would care less about broadly appealing. Let's just say, well, if they built a game that was solid and worked.
It didn't fall over. It had a client-server technology or something like that rather than this peer-to-peer stuff we've been dealing with for 10-plus years.
Yeah, just make sure that maybe they had a game that worked.
Yes, that would have been nice.
As the basis.
Indeed. It's a little like I don't know if you guys have followed SimCity recently. It got terrible.
Heard of stuff about it. I've read some stuff.
I don't want to go on about it.
No, it is not to be mentioned on this show.
Well, it got terrible reviews. Because
I remember in SimCity 2000, man, those were the days.
The original SimCity was great.
True.
Period.
Good enough. We have adequately addressed SimCity on our SIP podcast.
Dennis actually mentioned in the interview with regards to fans didn't just want to buy DLCs. You know how Beyond the Sword felt when it came out? It felt like this complete experience being Brave New World. So we'll just have to see what fan thinks of it when it comes out. But we'd like to think this is going to be one of those things that just wraps it up as a complete experience. But of course, there's an asterisk beside that because we already know that there is to be a fall patch. So it doesn't mean that Brave New World is kind of the be-all and end-all of everything, but I think might be getting at in terms of what happens after Brave New World comes out and after the fall patch, or maybe even in between Brave New World and the fall patch and then after the fall patch, what will Civ 5 hold? Will that be Civ 5 complete, like it ended up being with Civilization 4 with Beyond the Sword, with the exception of a couple of patches afterwards? Time will tell. Speaking of time passing and people reflecting on things.
Yes, indeed. This article is titled Civilization 5 Designer John Schaefer's Criticisms Were a Little Harsh, Says Current Designer. Basically, Ed Beach is responding to some of John Schaefer's comments in one of our previous episodes. We covered basically some of his own criticisms of Civ 5, particularly Civ 5 Vanilla. And Ed Beach said, quote, he was a little harsh on it, and I won't try to guess as to exactly what his frame of mind was. Unit stacking can be a problem in Civ 5, and I definitely think we've been acknowledging that for a while. In Gods and Kings, we made a change so that embarked land units could stack with naval units, because there was a lot of congestion out in the sea. So there are definitely issues, but I'm still a fan of one unit per tile. I think it improves the combat in so many ways. There's so much more tactical maneuvering and positioning. I think that's true, although I don't think that John Schaefer was being too harsh, especially with the Civ 5 Vanilla release. I mean, we were just talking about this, and if you look at this game now versus where Civ 5 was in the Vanilla release, it's night and day, and Civ 5 Vanilla is really bad. You forget, or it's easy to forget, just like how non-functional things like multiplayer really were. And you know, the carpeting was much worse back then. And I still agree with John that more hexes to move around would have been nice if the engine could have handled it, things like that. And really, Ed Beach didn't address a lot of John's criticisms when it came to things like the engines and whatnot, so I don't know what his opinions on that is, but certainly there are some technical limitations here, and maybe he just doesn't mention them because there's not a whole lot you can do about it if you're rendering everything 3D.
Yeah, they don't really get into it. I like the headline. It says, criticisms were a little harsh, and then they only really talk about one unit per tile.
Yeah.
That's it. It doesn't actually get into anything else Ed might have said. Maybe the writer didn't like what Ed said and didn't put it in.
Ed just didn't have a lot to say, because a lot of John's articles were criticisms over his own decisions or things that he thought would work and then didn't work. And, you know, what do you really say to that if you're the current designer that's fruitful? Like, I don't see what Ed could have said in a lot of these things.
Yeah, without basically going, na-na-na-na-na, I've got the good game.
That would have made some entertaining reading.
I'm surprised he spoke to PC Gamer at all, or anyone about it. I mean, I was agreeing with what some stuff John was saying, but how he was saying it, where he was essentially saying, it was my fault, this whole fall on the sword, I'm so sorry I made these decisions, my bad. It wasn't just you, John, although we'd like to point the finger at you, John, because you know you were the head, as it were. You weren't the entire body that created Civilization V Vanilla. So, you know, in that respect, and the fact that, yeah, as Magic was saying, this was all about one unit per tile, they did say that Ed commented on leader AI quirks, but they didn't feel fit to actually print that. So I actually would have liked to hear a little bit more about what Ed had to say about leader AI quirks.
Yeah, me too.
Response to John as opposed to one unit per tile, because the one unit per tile thing was not as big of an issue to me as leader AI quirks. And I do like the word quirks being used here. That's a paraphrase by the author. I wanted to hear more about that. That might have actually made a more interesting response. And then maybe would have been like, oh, now I understand why Ed actually spoke to PC Gamer about this.
Well, Dennis, again, to tie back to the first one, Dennis talked about how diplomacy with the AI was going to get a little more sane with Brave New World and stuff like that. So yeah, you can kind of say the same thing. We acknowledge that the AI that got built for Vanilla was quirky and nut bars and a little schizophrenic, but we're fixing it.
So. The game could have used so much refinement before it was released in vanilla. That's probably the number one reason it was so negatively received by, you know, like a good half of the community or so. Is it just wasn't, like, compared to where it is now, it just wasn't as developed.
Yeah, I guess the only useful point in the article is, says, you know, Beach couldn't hint at plans for Civ 6, but Beach said, it is true that there are now 43 Civs in the game with Brave New World. We actually hit 34 Civs with Gods and Kings, and now we're going to be 9 beyond that, so there's a number. I swear this guy randomly quoted things and put his own sentences around it. Basically, Beach didn't talk about Civ 6, but he did say that we're now 9 Civs above what every other Civ game has had. So whether or not you take that as a, we're running out of colors to to make Civs, and therefore we'll have to start on a new game, or if it's just, hey, we broke the magical barrier of previous games, maybe we'll just keep going. We'll have to wait and see.
Hey Polycasters, Dank You here. With the many inclusions of snippets from 2K's livestream of the upcoming Civilization V Brave New World expansion we discussed on this episode, it seemed fitting to me to add some more Civ-related content from other media sources to this offering. The Geek Fights podcast over at geekfights.net provides quote-unquote intelligent discussion of inane topics. Here's regular co-host Mike Ortiz describing the format of their show from its 36th episode released in February 2011.
We have an NCAA tournament-style bracket. We pit two competitors against one another and put it to a vote. Majority wins. The panel can decide the battle any way they see fit. Just use your geek logic.
Jason, Mega Bears fan Grade, guest on episode 140 of Polycast from Season 6, has also appeared on 5 episodes of the Geek Fights podcast to date. Episode 36 was on Best Video Game. Here's Geek Fights lead co-host, Damian Shaw.
Nate, this fight is yours. It is StarCraft versus Sid Meier's Civilization.
I'm going to have to go with StarCraft on this one, just for the fact I really... only ever played Civilization once. StarCraft, I was hooked on that game for quite a long time and had quite a good time with that. And even StarCraft 2 is awesome. So yeah, one StarCraft here.
A vote for StarCraft. Jared?
Well, it is my understanding that StarCraft is basically inspired by the old Sega Genesis Dune game. And I played the living hell out of the Sega Genesis Dune game. So I'm going to go with StarCraft.
A vote for StarCraft. I am not really an RTS guy.
And by RTS, you mean real-time strategy, right?
That is correct. But I really am not that much of a fan of Civilization either. I bought Civilization 5, and I could totally play it right now with Jason, but I just have no interest to play it. But I do own a Civilization, and I have put in like 30 hours into Civilization, so I'm going to go with Civilization on this one. Mike?
You know, I think I will go with StarCraft.
A vote for StarCraft. And Jason.
All right, well, I don't think that my vote matters all that much anymore unless I'm able to sway one of you. StarCraft is one of those games, a lot like Street Fighter II, that if there were a video gaming Olympics, it would be the game that would be played. And it's a real shame that these two games had to go up against each other in the first round, because both of these games, StarCraft and Civilization IV specifically, or Civilization II, depending on which one you actually prefer, are both viable contenders to be in the, you know, championship round of this particular fight. So it's a damn shame that one of them has to get eliminated. I'm going to vote for Civilization because I am just a huge Civilization addict. I think Civilization IV is the absolute best game ever made. It is my single favorite game ever. It's the one game that I've spent more time on than any other game I've ever played. And I also just don't like RTSs, and I don't like StarCraft specifically, because I've just found that more often than not, it's not really a game of skill or strategy. It's just a game of who can click the fastest and pop out the most units. So I got to go with Civilization, because I feel that it's a much better strategy game.
All right. A vote for Civilization. Anybody change their vote?
Man, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and change it to Civilization, because Jason's a really, really passionate dude. And I know he really wants to see this go forward. If this was the Dune game, the Genesis game, I would fight him tooth and nail. But you know what? This is StarCraft. I'll let Jason have the win.
Civilization is moving on. On to our next fight. Mike, this one is yours. It is Civilization versus World of Warcraft.
Well, I actually still do have a World of Warcraft character, and there are actually a lot of hot chicks who play World of Warcraft, so those two things alone will make it win for me.
All right, World of Warcraft. Jason.
Civilization 4 is the best game ever made, hands down, in my opinion, absolutely no questions asked. Civilization is just such an unbelievable time eater. I mean, it pretty much invented the phrase just one more turn. Just one more turn. In fact, after you beat the game brings up a prompt saying, do you want to exit back out to the menu screen or do you want to play just one more turn? Because you can keep playing the game even after you beat it. Because that's how unbelievably addictive this game franchise is. I once spent an entire spring break doing nothing but sitting in my room playing Civilization 4 and watching DVDs of Star Trek The Next Generation. I got through all 7 seasons of The Next Generation in that 1 week during spring break, or I don't know, maybe it was 5 seasons and then the other 2 seasons carried over into like the first few days of school, but doing nothing but playing Civ and watching Star Trek, and it was like a super awesome week. So I'm waiting for Civ, because Civ is just an unbelievably amazing game, even though Civ 5 is kind of disappointing.
A vote for Civilization, Nate.
Yeah, I'm not a big Civilization fan. World of Warcraft has a lot more content that I actually kind of find halfway interesting, so I'm going to go with World of Warcraft.
A vote for World of Warcraft. That might have been the saddest thing I've ever heard, Jason.
No way! That was brilliant! Are you kidding me?
I know! It's so... Oh my goodness! Wow! Wow. And that is why Civilization will get a vote from me. I'm going to vote for Civilization. It's all tied up, Jared. Where are you going?
Well, to my knowledge, Civilization 4 is the only game so far that has a link to Star Trek, The Next Generation. So I'll vote for Civilization 4.
A vote for...
It also has a link to the original series because Leonard Nimoy provided narration for the game.
Oh, there you go. Then... Boom! Civilization for the win!
Next fight is yours, Jason. It is Metal Gear Solid versus Civilization.
Oh, this is just cruel and unusual punishment. Metal Gear Solid is also one of my favorite games of all time, but I just haven't spent the sheer amount of time playing Metal Gear Solid games that I've spent playing Civilization. I have to vote for Civilization because, as I've said before, Civilization 4, I think, is the, you know, absolute best game of all time.
A vote for Civilization, Nate.
I'm actually going to go with Civilization on this one. I really, Civilization.
A vote for Civilization, Jared.
I'm going to go with Civilization as well. I know that Metal Gear Solid has like a religious following, but it really doesn't wow me, and I haven't played it. Civilization.
A vote for Civilization. I'm going to give love to Metal Gear Solid. Mike?
I think I'm going to vote for Civilization based on a lot of the stuff that people have been saying here about it. It sounds pretty good.
A vote for Civilization, and Civilization is into the Final Four.
What title did Civilization go up against in the Final Four? Did it make it into the Final Two? Moreover, want to hear the uncensored and uncondensed versions of the arguments you've already heard from Jason and the other panelists? Visit geekfights.net to access. Please note that the show includes mature themes and explicit language.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Longbow is ridiculous. It's better than the Choco.
No, it's not.
You can sit back a hex. You build sure. six or seven of those, you just kill everyone.
Yeah.
It's how you play, how you use it. It's just, yeah. In multiplayer, you'll get to, you know, I play with a lot of guys who are very experienced, been playing the game 2,000 plus hours. And when you get one of those sieves, their focus is very much towards that end of it. You get England, yes, it's map dependent or whatever, but you use their strengths.
Well, yeah, use every sieve's strengths. Longbows, if you have a lot of rough terrain, there is no long range in forests.
You just get on a hill.
Sure, you get on a hill, but maybe there's horses that can race in and smash you.
Even with knights, you can fortify on a hill.
If you're fortified on the hill, then you're not shooting.
I understand, but in terms... Anyway, we're going back to where we were.
Oh yeah, if someone needs tutorial help. Here, you two newbie people, come in here. I'll show you how it's done. For the whole internet to watch.
We're committing Magin to doing that right now.
Yep. Okay, you're welcome.
$60 an hour for training.
That would be funny if people would actually pay you for that. I know it happens in other games.
Yeah.
If you do, Mackie and I each get a 1% referral fee in perpetuity.
Thanks. Who knows? We'd have to see. Maybe Turncast. We just get an observer who runs around, and then people on Turncast Live can actually see both games because there'll be an observer slot.
Oh, I have no idea what Turncast is, so that's no good.
Oh.
How convenient!
The stabs in the dark about the other new civs. So I know we've got Portugal, Brazil, Shaka, and is it Assyria? Is that right?
Yes.
Is that how you say it? What do you think some people should
Canada. Definitely Morocco. We're going to see Canada, no doubt.
There's got to be Canada, right? There's got to be. So many Canadian Civ players. Got to be Canada. I'd really like to see, being Irish, I'd like to see Ireland. I know the Celts are there, but it's a British Celt rather than an Irish one. There was in Civ 4 an Irish Celt, but now it's a British one. Or, well, I should say English-based.
You know what?
We are more Welsh-based.
We need another Holy Roman Empire. Yeah. That's what
Holy Roman Empire. For
yeah, we need the Holy Roman Empire and Germany in the same game. It has to happen.
And France.
Yeah.
Well, we pretty much have all the new civs from Civ 4, if I'm right, except Holy Roman Empire. Is that right? So they may well be in there.
We're missing it?
Sumer and Khmer. Oh, yeah. Remember Sumer?
That's Summer? Right.
And the Khmer Empire.
Hey, Assyria just got put in.
Bring them back, yes.
But there's going to be Assyria? I have no idea where Assyria was.
It was right beside Babylon and kicked Babylon.
So Middle East. So there's got to be some more African ones if they're going to do an African scenario.
Well, there's the Belgian Congo, there's the Congo, there's Mali, there's...
Brazil.
Yeah, Mali.
There's Brazil.
Remember definitely maybe another... Maybe some people talking about Morocco, perhaps. So that could be good.
Yeah, people have been talking about Morocco as a in.
We need to pick something completely ridiculous and throw them in.
Australia!
Greenland. I think Greenland would be good.
Ooh, Greenland, yeah.
Yeah.
They break away from Denmark?
I don't know what uniques you'd give them, but...
Australia? Why not Australia? That's a good idea. They'd have some sort of extra mining sort of ability, and then they'd have a World War II age unit, you know, paratrooping abilities. Just a thought.
As a unique paratrooper?
Yeah. Yeah, because they did that stuff, didn't they? So why not?
Sure.
They're a big continent. I think they should be in there. They've got Polynesia in there. Why not?
That's true.
Don't forget Atlantis.
Oh, yes. Atlantis must be.
It existed somewhere.
Somewhere.
Be a believer.
We have crammed so much Civ goodness into this episode, I don't think anyone could handle anymore. It's just, it's too much. It's too powerful.
You can't handle my Civ.
We chose to close.
Closing time there, Alex.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me, and I'm looking forward to Brave New World just as much as, I guess, all the rest of the crazy Civ fans are. Yeah, I'm not sure if you wanted me to add anything else. But...
Oh, yeah, just reintroduce everybody so we can say adieu.
Okay, so thanks to Dan the Man.
Adieu.
The me and team.
I can always help you pack things with Civ goodness.
Makalui.
Thanks, bye.
And the one and only Mad Dijin.
Yeah, don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Closing time. One last call for us.
You have over like 20 or 30 YouTube comments. You are guaranteed at least a couple disparaging ones.
And probably about 30 of the 20 will be disparaging.
Yeah.
Wait. Did you say 30 of the 20?
Yeah.
He's accurate, too. That's probably about how many, give or take.
People are really curious about the great writers and the great musicians. I know at PAX I was joking around about how if Lady Gaga was there, she would certainly start a war.
I felt they sort of went backwards with Steam.
Oh, and so does your dog.
Yeah, he doesn't agree with that.
Somehow also related to Civilization V Brave New World. I
weird.
I don't.
What's with all the focus on this?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Coming expansion. I just don't get it.
What else is there to talk about in the world?
Record date April 20th, 2013. Brave New World livestream clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Geek Fights clips copyright Mike Ortiz. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.